This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silvestri and Jonathan Kyle. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to this week's edition of the Florida Spectacular, the podcast all about Florida. I'm one of your hosts, Kathy Silvestri. Our other co-host is John Kyle, who is also a fantastic Floridian. Today, we're going to talk about something that's been in the news recently, kind of break it down and talk about Walt Disney World. And no, we're not going to talk about It's a Small World or the People Mover.
We're not.
We can. I'm writing a feature article about the People Mover for one of my freelance clients. And it's riveting, actually. So
you're going to hand it to people when they get on the ride so that the ride is also riveting?
No, I love that ride.
I do too.
It's relaxing. You know, you whiz around through the dark. I still get a little tiny bit scared when we go through Space Mountain because I'm not a roller coaster person.
I think the beauty of the People Mover is the name.
Because
it's so like, what are we going to call it? We're going to call it the People Mover. Like, because none of the other rides move people, only the People Mover. Like, it's like, what does it do? It moves people.
But it was part of Walt Disney's vision. It was moving people through the Tomorrowland transit system, through the city of tomorrow. It was part of a bigger plan. And I feel like if you don't know the history of you know, Tomorrowland and how it was supposed to be Walt's vision, then you miss out on some of the beauty of the People Mover.
I think you're right. And I think also there's a double meaning, obviously, in that once people ride the People Mover, they are emotionally moved.
You know, you make fun, but I want to point out that if you're tired and you just want to sit down for a few minutes, you can convince your kids it's a ride. I mean, only the first time. And you get a few minutes off your feet.
Yeah, I am not hating on the People Mover. I appreciate the People Mover for all that it is.
I appreciate that I actually have a magazine I write for that they said, we need an article on the People Mover. That's called Kathy Silvestri. I was over the moon about that.
I would like one on Country Bear Jamboree.
I can do that. Maybe a literary analysis comparing and contrasting the Country Bear Jamboree with Chuck E. Cheese. It's
that's anyway. Controversial.
Anyway, it is.
Moving anyway, right along. Let's get back on topic.
People moving right along. You know, it is interesting. You talked about the People Mover that I talked about it, almost like we planned it. Because when Walt Disney World bought property in Florida, started buying property in the 60s, you know, there was this plan that Walt Disney had that there was going to be Epcot and it was truly going to be an experimental prototype community of tomorrow, not a theme park where people go to drink around the world. And that was one of the reasons he started buying land in Florida. And that, of course, leads us to today's podcast topic, which is the Reedy Creek Improvement District. And Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and his, he's been in the news lately. I don't know if you've seen it, John. He's made some headlines.
I think that is that Ron DeSantis making headlines is Ron DeSantis's goal, right? It's all about name recognition as we approach the notion of a primary and a nomination for the next presidential election. So if he can get his name in the headlines and boy, if Disney doesn't help, what does?
I mean, it is possibly. Disney is very Googleable. In fact, right now, if I go and just type in Disney into my web browser, you know, you get, of course, the ads for Disney and the news, oddly enough, is about Guardians of the Galaxy. And then, of course, an article from the New York Post where Blackburn slams Disney for opposing Florida's so-called Don't Say Gay bill. Anyway, that's where we get, you know, Disney does a good job of managing its media. The fact that that's far... not the first thing you see on the page.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think, you know, the first question I have is Disney the one you want to pick a fight with? Because people love Disney. And so do you, I mean, I understand like going to battle, but Are you winning people by going to battle with Disney? I mean, I don't know. Now there are those out there who like to hate on Disney too, you know? So maybe this is a battle he wants, but I question the wisdom, you know, it's kind of like, are we going to fight puppies? You know,
yeah, let's tell everybody we hate kittens. It'll be fun.
Yeah. And then you're going to get the people like, yeah, I don't like cats, but you know,
well, they're out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting as a friend of mine said last week, well, forget that it's Disney. Ron DeSantis right. is a person and Disney's a corporation and this is America. So Disney's going to win.
Well, and Disney is ABC, it's ESPN, it's, you know, you've got a big ball of wax you're fighting here.
I think, Marvel Cinematic Universe? I mean, do not make Star Wars. On the Hulk. Come on.
I think the other weird thing about this is if the designation, and you can kind of give a better, you know, a more in-depth history on why the designation exists and how it sort of exempts Disney from, you know, certain governmental municipality requirements and everything. But if it's a problem, if this needs to be revoked because it's a problem, what's the problem? The problem, as stated, is that Disney's woke. And anytime anybody uses the word woke, I don't care which side of the political spectrum you're on, you sound like you're on a talking point and I check out. I'm like, all right, I don't care, you know? So
let's not do that for our listeners today.
Right.
Let's not use those words.
So there isn't a problem. The problem is this imagined problem. It's spite is the problem, in my opinion.
It's obviously this is all our opinion. I think you and I agree. I think it's become, I don't know if you want to call it, I would call it a pissing contest maybe, or a penis showing game, although I don't know you want to say that in reference.
Yeah,
to
I don't know if it's that's like... the way the Associated Press is going to describe it, but it is a dispute of I don't know. I mean, it's politics. That's what it is, you know.
Well, I think it's politics on one side, but let's back up for everybody because. Obviously, if you've tuned into this podcast, you know that Florida has passed what is being called a Don't Say Gay bill about things you can discuss with school children. Not going to go into the finer points of the bill, but I think if we all admit it's called in the popular lexicon, we're referring to it as Don't Say Gay.
The leftist mainstream media. The woke media is calling it Don't Say Gay. We're protecting. Got it. Continue.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's even been a couple of weeks. The news cycle exhausts me. Disney CEO put out a statement to Disney cast members, which is what they call their employees because it's just the greatest show. And he apologized. He apologized for not condemning it sooner. And I don't know if you saw the letter, John, but it seems as sincere as you can get when you're trying to run stuff by the lawyers, right? He says, he apologized to the cast members and said, "I'm really sorry. I should have disavowed this sooner, and I let you down." And I thought it was actually very, very nicely done. Now, if you don't know that much about Disney, I used to work there in 93, 94. I was a cast member of what was called the Disney MGM Studios, today's Disney's Hollywood Studios. And
did you work on the Great American Movie Ride?
No, my ex-husband did, though.
I've known three people who worked on the ride. All right.
Yeah, they have a type. No, I worked on a one-hour guided walking tour to the production facilities and sound stages that no longer exist because nobody wants to go to Disney to do an hour walking tour and learn about production. But it was fun.
Clearly.
They want to go on the Toy Story ride. It was fun for me. Right. Let's put it that way.
Right.
But even in the 90s, Disney was very LGBT friendly. That's not, of course, what they called it. They offered same-sex health benefits. They did not allow discrimination. The cast members couldn't, you know, make fun of somebody for being gay. They were very, very liberal with that. And I don't know, I'm generalizing here, but I've also worked a bit in tech theater, and it does seem like there are a lot more members of the LGBT community involved in things like theater, and it seemed like we had an awful lot of gay cast members, which was fine. It didn't bother me. I mean, at one point, the joke was, of course, that, you know, when people would meet somebody's girlfriend, that was when they would realize that that man wasn't gay, because there were so many gay people working at
Disney. Right. Right.
So it has this culture of being very accepting and friendly, because creative people sometimes, I think, tend to be more accepting of thoughts and things and ideas. So it was this very accepting place to work. And so if you don't know that, it might have seemed a little odd that any Disney leadership would speak out against Don't Say Gay, because, well, what is a corporation doing poking their head into the government? And the reason is because so many of his employees, you know, are members of the LGBT community.
Right.
And, you know, so that wasn't simply just Disney inserting itself into politics. It was, you know, it was Chapek saying, hey, you know, we're sorry we didn't defend you.
And I think the way you know that it's an effective apology and that it is not just corporate speak, because they could have apologized in a way that didn't upset anybody.
Yeah, that wasn't sorry for anything.
But
right.
But they apologized in a way that that made the proponents of the bill upset, which means there was something there.
I mean, he basically said that, well, not basically, I can quote it. Among other things, it's clear that this is not just an issue about a bill in Florida, but instead yet another challenge to basic human rights. You needed me to be a stronger ally in the fight for equal rights, and I let you down. I am sorry. I mean, that's not like, gosh, I'm so sorry if you misunderstood me, or I apologize if my silence offended you. I messed up. And, you know, I think that resonates with people, and obviously it upsets people. And of course, now, based on this letter of apology and Disney standing up against this, basically against the governor, this has then caused this backlash, where the governor has said, well, we're going to revoke your status as the Reedy Creek Improvement District, which probably has most Americans going, what the hell is that? I spent a little bit of time this weekend going down a rabbit hole, and I thought I knew what it was. And I had a lot of fun, but so let's talk about what the Reedy Creek Improvement District is. Off the top of your head, without any research, John, what would you say the Reedy Creek Improvement District is, based on what you've heard in the news?
Well, my understanding is that, and this is kind of a long-term understanding, is that you have a place with a theme park, several theme parks. You have people that live in this area, either in apartments, cast members that rent apartments. You have hotels, you have a lot of things, restaurants, all in this area. And I grew up in Orange County, California, where Disneyland is in Anaheim. And Anaheim is a city of several hundred thousand people. And Disneyland exists in a city with a mayor and all of these things. And what the Reedy Creek thing did was really essentially allow Disney to operate its business in an area that, by and large, lacked voters, because it's their property, and they obviously exist in a county, but it kind of keeps them from having, they end up being their own municipality. And you know, probably most of it is legalese, and it was something that Florida said, hey, we want Disney here. We want to turn Orlando into the biggest tourist destination in the world. And you would have never gotten Disney without that. I don't think Disney would have come in and built Disney there if they thought in 40 years or 50 years or whatever it is the state was going to say, just kidding. So, you know, it's a problem. Is it a real problem, or is it a soundbite problem?
Well, I don't know. I've been looking at, you know, and nothing I love more than going through Muni Code and looking at all the different
which is what people come here for, right?
Well, I mean, you know, it's sexy. Who doesn't want you to unpack Florida legislature actually is worth.
Yeah.
But
read the whole bill first.
No, because I actually, it's not just making Disney its own city. There were some pretty important environmental and tax problems, Florida has water management districts, which if you live in Florida, you can tell, you always hear about in our area, Swift Mud, Southwest Florida. So I'm not going to give you the wording of the bill. Chapter 298 of the Florida statutes creates these water management districts. And the water management district is basically, they were created as flood control districts. Today, we see them as a little bit more than that. We expect them to take care of the water resources and manage them appropriately. I'm sure if you ask the people down in South Florida, they would all disagree. That's a whole thing with the Everglades. But we basically have five water management districts: Northwest Florida Management District in the Panhandle, Suwannee River Water Management District in North Central Florida, Southwest Florida Water Management District, which is over here on the West Coast, Pinellas County, Tampa Bay, St. John's River Water Management District up by up Palatka, Jacksonville, and the St. John's River, and South Florida Water Management District, which basically covers Miami and the Everglades and goes almost all the way up to Disney World, believe it or not. Now, the state doesn't list this on its website or in its map of districts, but the Reedy Creek Improvement District is technically also what they would call in the 60s a drainage district, because that's how these water management districts started. Right. So it doesn't just let Disney have its own mayor and its, 20 residents or whatever that live in the Reedy Creek District. It does a little bit more than that. Disney's part of Osceola County. And Osceola County commissioners actually helped Disney get Senate approval for the process to start this. And that was basically Disney came to town and they said, hey, we're thinking about doing Disneyland East. And yeah, as you can imagine, Florida was not very well developed in the 60s in Central Florida. And Osceola County, they went to some senators, they got some helps. So they got, in April of 1966, there was the Tampa Tribune, which has now been gobbled up by the Tampa Bay Times. They ran an article about getting a drainage survey that had bringing the federal government in and, quote, to hasten work on the Walt Disney development in the Orlando area. So basically, the Florida Senate adopted a resolution that basically said, let's do a survey. For the advisability, whether or not it's a good idea to improve flood control and water resources in the Reedy Creek Basin. So that was, of course, where Walt Disney World is today. So they did. They gave the Army Corps of Engineers many thousands of dollars to finance the survey. And basically what they wanted to do was Disney wanted to create a drainage plan because it's not in the Everglades proper, but it was just outside of the Everglades. It was fairly wet. And they wanted to make sure that if they were going to build this massive theme park, which we now know is four, and I don't even know how many hotels they have, and Disney Springs and all this, there was going to be some infrastructure need. They needed drinking water. They needed something to do with storm water so it just didn't puddle everywhere. And of course, they needed to do something with their human waste. Like people going to the theme park might have one too many churros, get a little sick. You needed to go somewhere. So
I like that you had to explain what human waste was, but we all,
Well, as soon as I said it, I'm like, I don't want people to think trash, but they had to create all this infrastructure. And by creating this separate water management district, it gave Disney control over that. Now,
So in a nutshell, it allows Disney to move their water without answering to anyone else.
Well, technically, I'm not sure because they do have to answer to somebody, but here's where it gets interesting. Our former governor, Voldemort, some people call him,
Rick Voldemort.
What's his real name? I can't remember it.
Voldemort.
No, seriously.
Scott.
I can't. Scott, thank you.
current U.S. Senator.
Yeah, current U.S. Senator, probably the guy who's going to run against DeSantis for president in a few months, we'll declare. we're
all gonna be best friends.
I don't know. This is bored. Why don't we just teach critical race theory next? Well,
yeah. Oh, that's not what you're doing? Oh, sorry.
No. Oh, so while Rick Scott was governor, one of the things he did is he removed the water management district's accountability. Well, that's not technically true. They used to have to, they were accountable to people. They were accountable. It wasn't just that. He said, well, you know what? These basin boards, these water management districts, they're just going to answer to me. So technically, I don't think DeSantis has changed this, Reedy Creek Improvement District, the basin board, should be answering directly to DeSantis. So, but that's just supposed to be in terms of, are they managing resources well? Are they making plans if there's a 100-year storm event? What are they doing with their wastewater? Are they not, you know, contaminating? Not like, hey, don't teach about gay people or don't teach about Black history. It was just supposed to be for, you know, are you operating the resources, not to check in? So,
and I think here's, you know, I'm going to stop you for a second, Kathy.
Please do, because I'll keep going for hours.
Because you will keep going. And I think that's the problem is we're going to talk about like what this all means, what it really means. It's political points. It actually has absolutely nothing to do with control over water or oversight or who's it. Like, he doesn't care about what happens to the water as long as people are making money off of it. It's about political points, you know. So let's not pretend like we're probably, if you actually boiled it down to what it is, he's probably suggesting accidentally that Disney needs more environmental oversight. But we know that's not what he wants. So what he wants is to score political points. Like, we can explain all day about the intricacies of what it means and what happens if they do this. That's not what it's about.
But it's not going to make a difference. Disney is still going to be able to. So our governor does take the improvement district away from, and I'd like to point out, technically, legally, not just Disney. There are actual landowners there who you know, the landowners are essentially the ones who elect the chair and govern themselves. And every acre of land equals one share. So, of course, that means that the Walt Disney World Corporation is the largest voting block there, but there are other people. So even if they say, well, you're not a district anymore, you get to be part of South Florida. It would either probably be South Florida or Southwest Florida that they would merge, fold them into. It's not going to change. Disney's still going to be, this all started, you know, because Disney has some education they do with some of their cast members or somewhere, I don't even know where they talk about what opponents of Black history, real Black history, call critical race theory. Disney's still going to be able to do that. They're still going to be able to oppose this stupid Don't Say Gay bill. It doesn't actually do anything other than takes the district away. Now, here's the question, John. What happens to that infrastructure if Disney isn't responsible for it anymore? Because Disney's infrastructure, I'm not going to lie to you, is a little bit better than what you're able to do with state funds.
Well, we've always marveled at the fact that, you know, you can go to Fort Wilderness and camp without getting eaten alive by mosquitoes. And that's because the water is moving, right?
It's
not stagnant. Yeah, I mean, you know, we probably need 2 more hours to decide, you know, what Disney can and can't do. I think the side by side along with the battle with Disney is that this bill is going to end up in court and it's going to get ruled unconstitutional. When, you know, and I have a firsthand experience, and maybe what I offer for this discussion is, you know, we have 2 kids. They've been in public school, and, you know, one of my son's best friends, you know, has 2 moms, and no one thought anything of it. First grade, kid's got 2 moms. I know them. They're great. You know, like, and, you know, I'm sure at some point somebody in the class could have asked, you know, hey, how come so-and-so has 2 moms? And the teacher would say, well, some families have 2 moms, and some families have a dad and a mom, and some families have 2 dads. And the kids go back to the coloring and learning their ABCs, and everybody's happy. And then somebody's parent goes, you told them what? You're indoctrinating my kids. And now we're after the teacher because they've broken the law and we're in court. And so what does this do? This is, we're going to repeat DeSantis' name 1,000 times in the news as this goes through the court. He's going to lose in court. We're going to talk about activist judges, and we're going to say DeSantis' name 1,000 more times. And that's going to carry him through the primary and his hopes. It also could blow up in his face. You could anchor a bunch of Disney and ESPN fans, Star Wars fans, Marvel fans, and they could all be like, this is a joke. So,
that's
my cynical look at it, because we could parse it all day.
No, I think it's a very realistic look at it.
But most people are watching CNN or Fox News, and they're going to get it in 5-minute bits.
True.
Sorry.
I mean, there's no... So it doesn't matter. So what you're saying is it doesn't matter that the possible implications of this bill is that all the expensive infrastructure Disney's built is now going to fall to the taxpayers, or that, any of those things would then potentially put some, this is where I see it. I get it. You're right. You're not cynical. You're realistic. This is where it's going to go. But this is what bothers me, is if it doesn't go that way. If the only casualty here is democracy when Ron DeSantis becomes president because of the good publicity he got out of this, then we don't have to worry about anything else. But what I worry about is what if it holds up? What if for some reason this doesn't get thrown out of court, doesn't get declared unconstitutional? The taxpayers who, I don't know if anybody's noticed, we're a service-based economy in Florida. And, you start taking punches at one of the biggest draws for our tourist base. We have to deal with it there. And now the taxpayers have to upkeep the infrastructure. I also worry about, there's some fragile wetlands on Disney property. There's definitely some endangered scrub habitat. There are environmental things that happen.
It's almost like you're saying that DeSantis hasn't considered the consequences of what he's suggesting. I would hate to think that he's suggesting something that would have a cascading series of negative consequences if it went through. Because,
well, that's what I'm saying.
That would be irresponsible leadership and governing.
It's the law of unintended consequences. And it's, you're doing one thing, but if it goes through, it's incredibly irresponsible. And it's very unfair to people in the state. It's not unfair to you or me. It's not going to affect my life, other than I'm going to be bummed if I can't go to Disney, and I'll be upset if we start killing, if we decide we're going to take right-of-ways and decide that they're state property and pull the parkway through them. I'm going to be pissed about that. Aside from writing about the people mover for the odd client, there's always another Florida writing client around. I'm not going to shrivel up and die if this happens. But what I think about... I think a lot about the people who work in and around the area who really depend on that level of tourism and don't have jobs that they're, there's a lot of people out there living paycheck to paycheck, and they're still hurting from 2020, and then you're going to do this and put more taxes on them. That seems,
And I think that's, your level of analysis is not going to make it, past the ears of a few listeners and maybe somebody who picks up a long read on Sunday in the Tampa Bay Times or the Sentinel or something like that. I don't think that the end game is to drive Disney's numbers down or drive down tourism. I think the end game is to win the sound bites. When the sound bites start going the wrong way, you just let it go. Session 60 days, we talk a lot about Florida politics for 60 days, and then it all kind of dies out and everybody forgets how much they hate these people by the time the elections roll around. I think, that I keep coming back to, I think if we get too wrapped up in the actual, details of it, that's what, then we're losing the bigger picture, that we're just really lobbing hand grenades at this point. That's politically.
Well, I sadly suspect you're right. But I also feel like we've been talking about this. All I keep hearing about on the news is this, he's going to take away Reedy Creek. And I haven't seen anybody actually explain what that means. I've heard, it's a taxing district, it's this and that. I just felt like we should talk about
And then you're right. You're right. And I think
for those three people,
we've accomplished that. You know, I, to the extent that we understand it, and that's to say we've taken the time to try and understand it. And like you said, still not quite sure we're totally understand all of it, right? Does anybody, you know, it probably wasn't understood when it was enacted. And they kind of went, well, let's see what happens. You know, it's kind of how a lot of times we pass a law and then we go, all right, let's see what actually happens when this passes. I think let's see, because people keep saying about the Don't Say Gay bill. Well, it's not really going to do anything. It's just political points. It doesn't actually do anything. That's kind of like
I disagree with that, though.
Well, I do too. So now we have to kind of wait and see what happens with this bill. You know, I think, you know, what has happened so far is we've riled up the base, maybe two bases.
Well, I'm riled.
Yeah, you know.
How riled am I? I'm riled enough that I made reservations to go camping at Disney to show my support.
Yeah, and I guess here's the next question. Really, the interesting thing is, what does Disney do next? How does Disney choose to fight this? Does Disney take this threat seriously, or does Disney call the bluff? Yeah.
Well, I mean, Disney doesn't have to do anything. They can just sit and wait, and if he tries to do it, you know, they when I worked for Disney, they made it very clear to us that, you know, you go through this whole indoctrination the first weekend or first 3 days you work there, and it's called traditions. I don't know if they still do this, but it's teaching you not just about what you're going to be doing at your attraction or at your food service place or your restaurant. It teaches you about Disney's history and how they handle things and how they expect you to behave. You know, they break it down for you. I remember it vividly. Their four pillars are safety, efficiency, courtesy, and show. And it's in that order, right? Like, safety is the most important. You know, and then of course at the end, all those things feed the show, and they spend a whole weekend talking to you about that. And it even extended to talking about people who sued Disney. And Disney is always been fairly transparent that if they think they're wrong, they will settle. Little kid eaten by an alligator, which I disagree with that whole thing. I mean, I'm not sure that we're getting the full story about that. Disney settles immediately. The woman who walked into guest services and put a brick on the thing on the counter and said, this fell off Cinderella's castle and hit my son and I'm going to sue you. They let her go to court because Cinderella's castle isn't made of brick. That was somebody trying to scam them. But they... Yes. Hard to believe. There's great stories about people who have tried to sue Disney or come at Disney legally. And basically, if Disney lets it go to court, you're screwed. And I think that's basically what they're doing here is they're just gonna, I mean, if I ran the show, which I clearly do not, I would assume that, you know, what I would say is, if I was a lawyer advising Disney, I'm like, well, let's just see if he does it. And if he does it, we're going to take him to court. Yeah. And, you know, they have a huge legal team. It's not going, I mean, I agree with you. It's not going to happen. There's simply no way anybody other than the most vile politician is ever going to come out against, you know, the theme park that has the whole, you know, Mickey Mouse. They bring in kids, terminal kids, and they give them their, you know, give kids the world. They put them up at a special place and they make their dreams come true. Nobody, who's going to go against that? Who goes against
that?
Yeah,
and the thing is, DeSantis will be able to say, well, I couldn't get, you know, there are cowards in our legislature who didn't have the spine to do it, you know, and they'll save him from himself, you know, as they often do. And the people mover will continue to move people.
It will. I'm excited about it. You know, I waited an hour in line for the people mover last month.
And I think that's interesting because, you know, you and I, as an aside, have had a lot of discussions about the experience of Disney. Now, you're a Disney lover, and I think Disney does a wonderful job of particularly catering to people our age who've been to Disney. It's sort of like they really sell the nostalgia of the, you know, you go back, they haven't changed the Haunted Mansion, you know, they might have cleaned it a little. They've got Johnny Depp now at the end of Pirates, but that's pretty much the same. You know, so we go back, we have these memories, and we bring our kids and they see it. And then when they get older, they bring the same thing. I have, because People Mover now for me is like just about the only ride I can get on. Because I have like, you know, when they have that long list, I'm not pregnant, but you know, when they have that long list of things
good
that
to know.
Would prevent you from going on a ride. And it's not because I'm short. It's, you know, so if I'm going to spend, you know, $125 odd for me to enter Disney, I feel like the People Mover shouldn't make me wait. I mean, I know I could probably play the card and get,
well,
get
you could play your line. Yeah, you could play a
but
card
I don't look like there. A guy who should skip the line either. So, but I'm saying the point is I'm trying to make in a sort of rather humorous way is Disney does have an issue, like an experiential issue in terms of price versus experience for some of us who, you know, maybe don't know the Fast Pass game and don't read all the blogs.
They don't have Fast Passes anymore.
See? So, I don't know. Like, so like last time I had a friend going to Disney that his sister studies these things, and there was like this huge, like better than Putin's, you know, battle plan in Ukraine on how to go into Disney and have, you know, an experience where you got to ride the rides you wanted to do without waiting in too many lines and go here and go there and go to this and do that. And it was like a 20-point plan that everybody had to buy in on and participate in, or the whole thing would fall off. And that to me is the stress, you know, of, for me personally, of Disney is, all right, I'm going to be dropping a couple grand today in order to do this. And and I don't want it to end up with us melting down at 11 a.m. and dragging you to the parking lot.
You come at it with kids, which changes the game, right? So, you know, kids, I don't have kids that I know of. College was fuzzy, but I don't think I had any kids. I don't, Barry and I will go to Disney and we have annual passes, mostly because I don't want to pay. Do you know what? It's like $25 to park at a theme park if you don't have the passes.
I'm aware.
Yes, you are. I'm sorry. We'll just park at Disney Springs and take the bus, man. It's free. But you know, we will go and we'll go out, you know, well, the next time we go out, I'm sure it'll just be for the day. But if we go out for a day, we go out and maybe get, I don't know, lunch, maybe dinner, have a drink at Epcot. Barry has a definite fondness for the Joffrey's coffee cart right by the United Kingdom. Maybe we'll ride a ride. Maybe, you know, we're at Animal Kingdom. They have some great live entertainment. We'll watch, you know, the street performers or some of the bands, but we don't feel the pressure to get at all that. So to me,
and
it's
that is
enjoyable.
The way to do it, because we had passes that were actually given to us when our kids were small, and we would literally duck into the park. We'd have lunch, you know, in the campground. We'd go into the park. We'd have our fast passes, which I don't know what they do now, but we'd have fast passes for like two or three rides or whatever they let you do. We'd ride those three rides, and we'd dip out, you know, and we'd be there for 2 hours, 3 hours by the time the kids are getting antsy and they don't want to wait in lines and they're done, you know. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't spend $1,000 to do that.
No, I see these families. Last time we were there, we went to the Polynesian for a drink when we were done. And we wanted to, because if you go to the Polynesian and there's a bar upstairs, you can see the fireworks without being shoulder to shoulder with people. So you're sitting at a table, and if you want food, you can get small plates. And so we're sitting there and we're watching people checking in. And the Polynesian is like a top tier Disney. Like there's no comparison for this. Like it's, I think, $1,000 a night this week if you want to stay there. And you're watching these families check in. And I'm adding it up in my head. And I'm like, God, I wish I had stock, because people willingly hand over their money. When I worked there, they raise the prices. You know, they do that periodically. But when I worked there, it was like $40-something to get in for the day. And they raised the prices, and they sent out, you know, they have daily, I'm sure they just do it on your phone now or whatever, but they used to have daily newsletters for each department that you would get. You could pick them up when you clocked in at wardrobe or whatever it was called, or when you got to your lead office. And they explained to us that they raised the prices because, you know, essentially Disney's theory is, or they say that unless there's a line at every attraction, they're not making money, which isn't that hard to believe when you think about what goes into it. But they raised the prices because they needed to make money. They needed to continue to be profitable. But they added they would do a survey as people walked through the turnstiles. This is back when they had the physical turnstiles. And they asked people. I mean, you've seen them. If you've gone there, the people sitting around with, now they have like an iPad and they pull you aside. They asked them if they would be okay paying, I don't know, $10 more admission. Would you be okay with the price increase? And the majority of people said yes. Right. And this is right after these people, because there was no internet to speak of then. These people had just forked over money to walk in the door. And the response immediately is, yes, I would pay more to do this. I mean,
the question is, are they asking that question at the exit? Would you have spent $10 more to do this today? Because I think people enter the park with great expectations. I think we sort of want to go and believe we're going to have the experience we are. And when we spend a lot of money on something, we probably exit the park saying, convincing ourselves that it was worth it. And I don't want to sit here and say it's not worth it. I think Disney knows what they're doing. I think Disney has raised the price to a point where they go, I don't want people who want to come here for $80. I only want people who will come here for $120, you know, because we're going to get fewer people. We're going to give the higher paying customers a better experience because there are fewer people. It's a balance, obviously. I mean, if it was $10, they'd be flooded with people and it'd be a horrible day. So they're playing the supply and demand game, right? And they've figured out that the demand is where it is. And I'm not going to argue with whether or not Disney is a viable business or whether or not they're doing what they should or shouldn't do. I am not among the people who want to pay to go do that. My kids want me to be among those people, and my kids would go and they would probably have a great day. But, you know, if I made more money, you know, maybe I would be one of those people. Be like, yeah, whatever, heck, it's one day. Who cares? A couple grand, big deal. You know,
we have friends who belong to the very secretive Club 33, where there's just a ridiculous buy-in and a monthly fee, and you get exclusive access to things. And to them, it's worth it. You know, it to them, they have the money and it's worth it. I don't think I'd ever go that route because it's almost as much as my first house costs just to join the club. But I wouldn't take advantage of everything because they get a lot of perks. But I will tell you, I don't see, and I've thought about this, I don't see a point in my life where I live in Florida and don't have the annual passes because I grew up going to Disney. I had one of the first annual passes that was $99 a year for 4 months out of the year. I worked at Disney, and the first time I went back to Disney after working there and I had to pay for a ticket, I'm like, well, this is bullshit. This is a lot of money. What if there are lines? So, you know, I'm one of those people that they've got caught right in that middle thing. I'm never going to be one of their super spenders.
It's almost like when you go to Vegas and you go to a casino, right? And you have like the loyalty card. It's sort of like, you know, I mean, honestly, Disney doesn't want someone who's coming in there complaining about the price of a drink or a hamburger or parking. You know, they don't.
Well, and here's
who wants me. I'm primed to be like, really? I just paid $500. Now I got to wait in line to ride Small World. You know, like I'm not their audience. You know, and I'm not criticizing those who are.
No, I'm not saying that everybody has to love Disney. I'm with you. I don't want everybody to love Disney. One of the best pieces of advice you ever gave me, because the pass I have has certain blockout dates and you can pay more to go any day of the year. And you said something and it really struck with me. No, give me the pass with the blackout dates. I want to know when there's going to be too many people. Tell me when there's so many people here, you don't want me.
Right.
Here.
Yeah.
And it's great. But
to bring it full circle, I told you the other day when we were kind of talking about this, I went when I was in my 20s accidentally on what was gay day at the time. I don't know what they call it now.
Been a Disney sponsored day, just so you know. Gay days were never a Disney thing.
Well, clearly. So I just happened to be there on the day that was gay day. And there are lots of groups of people with wearing matching shirts, you know, who come from all over the country, all over the state. And, you know, as a 20-year-old, I wasn't 20, I was like 25 or something, who didn't have kids at the time. It was an amazing day because most of the people who showed up did not have children. And so you didn't have like the miserable families sweating their butts off and kids crying and all that kind of dynamic going on. And you really just had like a lot of people who were there to just, you know, have fun and hang out with their friends. Mm-hmm. It was all kind of like the vibe was very different, but also you had like these extremely confused, like families from like Germany or Japan who were like, is the United States just, is it like 90% gay? Because everybody at Disney is gay. So it was like a very, it was really the best day to go. Like you're saying, like, tell me what day to go. Go on the unofficial gay day, because the lines weren't that bad. People were very courteous. There weren't like families. It was kind of a good vibe that day.
I'll tell you, man, it's Disney. I would pay double if I could go on a day where it was adults only. Not because of the kids. The kids in and of themselves are not the problem. It's the parents who have decided that they've paid $500 to walk in the door, and you know, little Tommy wants a nap because he has a routine, and you are determined to get every last dollar out of your day.
Exactly.
So forget the nap. You're not getting a nap. And I've actually heard fathers say to their kids, stop crying and enjoy this, or I'll give you something to cry about. It's like,
seen,
are you serious?
We were walking at one time, and someone was disciplining their kids so badly that we almost called security, you know. So I mean, everybody's having you can have a rough day there, and it's, you know, as you can anywhere. But I think here I have an idea. What I want you to do is, as you have annual passes, I want you to take my kids to Disney. And I'll pay for their tickets and I'll send them with some spending money. But you take my kids to Disney.
Your kids are a dream, by the way.
Yeah. And you didn't
because
take
they
them
spend
both.
More
you
time
can
around.
Take one of them on separate days.
Are you serious?
They might want to go together. They won't ride. You know, our kids aren't huge on rides. Like I scarred our son by taking him on Pirates of the Caribbean when he was like 3. And he did not enjoy it.
Look, there are parts of Pirates right before you do that little drop where I still grab Barry's hand because it's a little freaky and you know what's coming. But if you're
he talks about the hairy foot hanging over. Really, that's the part that bothered him.
Wow. Okay. So there's definitely going to be some therapy in his future, and it's going to involve you taking him to Disney. That's fantastic. No, right. I get it. The game changes when you take kids. Yeah. And it's, if you could have annual passes again and have it not be, you know, the cost of annual passes, and your kids knew there was always going to be a next time, it changes a little bit, but when they're little, they don't know that. Right.
You know
they
I would pay for? I would pay $50 to go half day. Don't kick me out. You know,
they have Epcot after 4.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do that. It's here to help. But it's only Epcot, and kids aren't always big on Epcot.
My kids would probably love Epcot because again, they're not huge on the rides. You'll never get them on Space Mountain. You probably won't get them on the Haunted Mansion.
See, I feel like your kids would be like me at Epcot.
They're
like,
exceptional in their dislike of rides. So,
well, they're exceptional in a lot of ways, but I could definitely see taking Anna into the exhibit at the American Adventure where they talk about, you know, a very decolonized history of the American Indian, which is something most people go
I've
right
probably
by.
Done that. I mean, she doesn't really remember. She was like 3.
No, but I mean, she would know. She's grown up now. She's almost dating, right? It's look, Disney's, I think the point we're making intentionally or not is that, you know, Disney is a little bit something different to everyone, but probably not who you want to pick a fight with. But if you actually, you know, if you tuned into this podcast hoping to understand what the hell the Reedy Creek thing is, I hope we unpacked it a little bit more. And I want to leave you with this, John, that Disney stock is trading at $138.48 today, which is up from yesterday or up from Friday. So, you know, this isn't hurting them financially.
Yeah. their
stock
be all right.
is doing. Other stocks doing just fine.
Yeah, I think we also established that we're not just Disney apologists, because this wasn't like a Disney love either, you know. But I do think I agree. I think it's going to be interesting. I think we should revisit the topic in briefly and down the road to see, you know, how this plays out.
I mean, I'm always up for a Disney podcast, and if we have to bring current events into it, that's fine. The next podcast we do though, I want us to figure out a way we can spend 24 hours on Disney property without paying a dime for anything. I'm fascinated by this. I get obsessed as I walk around, like, where could I
sleep? Without paying a dime for anything. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've got the day worked out where you don't have to pay for anything. But I struggle with where do you sleep, but that's a different podcast for another time.
Gotcha.
Anyway.
Boondocking. All right.
Yes.
Challenge accepted.
I think
they're
going to
start. The music is going to play us off here pretty soon, Kathy.
Tad's just going to ratchet up the music. But the good news is there's always more where this came from. And we've got a lot of really great things on the horizon. So make sure you check back with the podcast and listen to us next time. We've been your hosts, Kathy Celestri and John Kyle. We'll see you next time on the Florida Spectacular.